Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. This time of year, many places collect for local food banks. It's hard to miss. No matter where you look, nationally, provincially, or locally, food bank usage is up. In Northumberland, more than 5,600 people visited a local food bank in the past year. Altogether, these people used the various food banks over 61,000 times. There are 12 local food banks in the county, but there are also 52 nonprofit groups who receive food from the county's Food for All warehouse and 40 student nutrition programs in local schools. It's staggering. On today's show, we will delve into what is going on at the Fair Share Food Bank in Cobourg and Port Hope as an example. Megan Flindle, the executive director, will take us inside the struggles a growing number of people face just to eat. And it's especially challenging during this festive season. I am so pleased to have with me today Megan Flindle, Executive Director of the Fair Share Food Bank. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
The food banks were tapped more than 7.7 million times by Ontarians needing food support. Can we begin by telling us why such a massive increase?
You know, I think the province, as well as the nation, is experiencing the rising costs of everything right now. So we have inflation at levels that, you know, we haven't seen in a very long time. Costs of goods and services are increasing for everybody across the board. And there's many, many bills that are piling up for people, and it's difficult. And there's not a lot of places that you can turn for support. And food banks came into existence, you know, in the 80s, and they provided and were intended to provide that emergency crisis support. And what we've seen in this drastic increase across the province is that people are now relying on these services, and they're getting them through week to week, not just emergencies, not just crisis. And you can see that reflected in those numbers of, you know, over 7 million visits.
How is employment a factor?
Oh, it's definitely an interesting topic, because what we're seeing in the food bank industry is more and more people are actually citing employment as their main source of income. So what the province is showing is 1 in 4, and Fair Share is pretty close. We're about 1 in 5, I would say. So part-time or full-time or multiple jobs, and they still can't make ends meet. They're still not able to have enough at the end of the paycheck to get out and cover everything that they need to. And that's tricky. That's hard.
In the 2024 Hunger Report, it describes the unraveling of social safety nets and the placing an even greater strain on food banks. Now, we've talked about the main reasons why food banks are necessary, but what about some of the other supports that existed in the system that are now starting to fail, and therefore people are being forced to go on to food banks?
Well, I think we expected an increased use of food banks during the pandemic. And what actually came out of the pandemic was quite a lot of assistance programs, you know, CERB being one of them. And we actually saw people having a little bit more access to funds than maybe they were used to. And so in that time, we didn't see the demand that we're seeing now. And as those assistance programs are removed post-pandemic and some of that support is, you know, clawed back, now we're seeing that doubling in usage. Now we're seeing that unprecedented growth that we anticipated during that time. So what we can see is that that increased assistance really does allow people to get out of the situations that are difficult and get back on their feet.
As somebody who's on the front line, what are some of the hidden factors or the less obvious pressures that are impacting people that we haven't talked about already?
Well, I mean, everything is going up, right? So when you think about somebody that's on a fixed income, and then you think about housing being raised, or you think about the gas prices skyrocketing, or you think about, you know, this crisis that we're in with food costs, there's just not a lot of places for people to turn. And I just think it's really difficult, the stories that we hear. And the things, the comments that neighbors are saying about how, forget about frills, we can't even get through paying our hydro costs or our gas bills and affording food. So we're not even talking about being able to get the next level stuff. But we know at this time of year, there's added stress, added costs when you think about the holidays, visiting family, when you think about big meals and gifts. There are times of years that we do see costs, you know, growing even more for families and households that they just can't keep up with.
Are people falling through the holes in the system?
I definitely worry about that. And I think that they must be, because we will hear stories, you know, there's precarious housing stories. And you just know that they're just right on the cusp of something worse, being unhoused or having nowhere to turn. Or people that are now living in their car that didn't expect to be there. And you think, how are we not getting to these residents in our community and getting to them a bit faster and helping them to not end up in that situation and in that crisis? Do I have the answer for it? I don't have the answer for it. But I know that I don't want anyone living in their car, and I wouldn't want, you know, to have that situation for myself either.
Let's talk locally. What are you seeing? Can you maybe share some numbers?
Yeah, I absolutely can. So what we've seen, obviously, I talked a little bit about the growth coming post-pandemic, and we've doubled our usage post-pandemic. This year, up to November, we've already seen 874 new people access our services for the very first time. So they've never come to Fair Share before, and they have this year. And last year, it was 668. And I thought that was astronomically high, because in 2022, we saw 227. So when you think about that amount of new people needing food bank services, so it's staggering when we consider that many new people needing to use our services in a year.
Can you give us some idea just how many people you're serving at this time?
So as you mentioned earlier, food banks, we look at our clients in two different ways. So one way being the unique individuals coming, and then the total visits. So our unique individual count over our two locations, Coburg and Port Hope, we serve 3,612 unique individuals. And this year they've made over 29,000 visits. So they can visit us every other week. So that's a lot of visits. And that's something that we just have to keep up with when we think of donations and funds coming in.
So how many days are you open now?
So in Port Hope, we're open Wednesday. And you can come and visit Wednesday morning or Wednesday evening. And in Coburg, we're open both Wednesday morning and evening. And then we're open for pickups on Thursday afternoon. We're open Friday morning and Saturday morning.
How big an increase is that 29,000 visits?
Well, the difficult thing is that last year, our neighbors were able to visit us every week. So our numbers aren't quite the same. Last year, neighbors made 43,000 visits, and that was because they could come weekly. So we had to make the difficult decision this January to revert to our pre-pandemic levels of service, which was biweekly. So every other week they could come and visit. Just from the increase in demand that we were seeing, we couldn't ensure that we could get everybody through in the times that we had. So they're not apples to apples anymore. Had we kind of taken that across, we would have seen a 40% increase if we had the numbers that we are seeing visiting.
Can you share some of the demographic information about the types of people who are using the food banks in Northumberland?
What we've seen in Northumberland is that we are slightly above the provincial metric for youth. And so we are sitting just above 30% of our neighbors are under the age of 18. And that's a really difficult statistic to share because we all know that our youth don't have access always to earning an income, getting their own groceries or food. So they're completely reliant on their families and the situations that they're in. And that's hard. And then we're also seeing, as I mentioned earlier, an increase in the number of people that are listing employment that are needing to use our services. And we are seeing, you know, anyone on a fixed income are using food banks more regularly, and that includes our senior population. So typically that's an area that has remained pretty steady. Their segment doesn't normally increase a lot. There's a lot of different reasons for that. But in the last year, we have seen that that segment has increased.
By how much?
It's not a significant, it's probably increased by a third, but it's a small amount of the people visiting overall.
Can we talk just a moment for clarity around the those under 18? Mm-hmm. Are those people living on their own, or are these young children and youth that are living with families?
Most often they're living with families. So that would be, you know, your family of four would come in. It's two adults and two youth under the age of 18. So they're accessing food for all of them. We do typically see, you know, larger families coming out of the Coburg location where there can be a lot of children in a household as well, but not as many that you would think living on their own or in a precarious situation housing-wise.
So why do you talk about that stat as being children rather than saying there's a 30% increase in families using food banks?
I think that we tend to record someone as a household, so it's hard to distinguish whether somebody's like a single couple or a family in a household. So it's just tricky. Yeah. So that's where that sort of youth number comes up when you're talking like Feed Ontario or Food Banks Canada News. That's why they bring up under the age of 18.
If I understand you correctly, then what you're saying is that you look at somebody as a household, and it could be a couple, some people living together. It could
people.
Be a family. Mm-hmm. This way, by looking at it in terms of children, it's mm-hmm. a way that you capture the idea of this is a family that's coming in and not
yes.
just a household.
Well, it's tricky data.
So you are currently collecting food and donations. Can you update us on how that's going at this time of year?
You know, kind of this Q4 time, the end of the year, is giving season, and the community comes out in force, and they're truly incredible. I'm always blown away, you know, all year long, but especially this time of year, the food drives that we see, the funds coming in from organizations, individual people who are currently walking their donations in because of the postal strike. They're not letting anything come between them and supporting their community. And what I am excited to say about, you know, Northumberland, about Fair Share, is that we have not seen a decline in our donations. And for that, I'm shocked. I think about the rising costs, and I expected to see a different outcome because everybody's costs are rising. And for our community to still go out and get a little bit extra food and put it in that donation bin, or to come by with their own funds, it's beautiful to see.
What's your goal for this year?
Oh, I don't know that I have a goal. Right now we're focused on turkey tickets. So we're selling, you know, those tickets across retailers in Coburg and Port Hope for $20. You'll get a taxable receipt with that. And that allows us to get a four-person household, a holiday meal, as well as a holiday breakfast. And I think that really goes far with people and is really important.
What about donations versus food items? What, in terms of what you prefer or what you're looking for at this time, what do you appreciate more?
Oh, that's a tricky one. because we are so thankful for everything that we get at this time of year and all year round. But obviously, we know how to stretch a dollar in a food bank. And so we have some relationships with retailers, wholesalers, farms, where we can stretch the funds a lot further than maybe you personally could at a grocery store, and able to put more on our shelves that way. We're also able with funds to purchase things that you typically as a donor wouldn't be able to, you know, leave in that shopping cart at the end of the grocery store, like the milks, the cheeses, the ground beef, the chicken. That are so important to families and households to have for nutritious health. So that's really where we are able to spend our funds.
How about the county's Food for All program? What is your relationship like currently with them?
Yeah, we have a great relationship with Food for All. We're so lucky to have them, you know, just not too far away from us. So they operate really as the warehouse. So they can hold more food, and you can purchase a membership through them. Really any organization can access them, whether you're a food bank or a breakfast program. And then you get to kind of go in and shop through there to see if there's anything that you could use. And so that support is very helpful for sure. And we have a membership with Feed Ontario as well that is helpful to access more food.
Does the food bank do Christmas hampers?
So we don't use a hamper program at Fair Share. We actually do a shopping model. So it's a little bit different. So when neighbors come in, they'll work with a volunteer and they'll walk through our shopping room that's meant to replicate a grocery store, because for some households, this is their grocery experience. And so that helps with that sense of dignity and respect. Because they're visiting us every other week, and we may be their main source or one of their main sources of food. So they'll come through and they'll choose what they want from our shelves based on what's available and how much we can offer at the time. So what we do over the holidays is that we would change out some of our items. You'd see stuffing, cranberry and pineapple, those instant potatoes, you know, pancakes, syrups, things for breakfast. And then we'd bring in turkey and hams to be able to give out to households based on their choice of what they would use.
The increased cost of food has impacted Fair Share in the past. Have you experienced any relief in this area over the past year?
I think where we've seen the difference, especially having somebody in my role, is that we're able to negotiate some of those relationships with retailers, with wholesalers, with farmers, and deepen those connections so that we're able to access, whether it's sales or overstock or things running up close to their best before date, at price reduced prices. And that's helped us considerably to be able to stretch our dollars for sure.
What about volunteers? I know in the past there's been an ongoing need for volunteers. What's your status now?
I think there's always an ongoing need for volunteers. That never goes away. We've seen some success this year. We were able to get some funding through OTF, so the Ontario Trillium Fund, to help with volunteer coordination and a volunteer system. And that's really helped us to maximize our volunteer hours and get people in and working in the right areas. But, you know, we have this unique population of volunteers who we've got the snowbirds, and then we lose them through the winter, and we need to replace them kind of seasonally. There's just an ever-evolving need for volunteers, and especially volunteers in the food bank world that can do things like lift a lot of heavy food, right? So we're doing a lot of receiving of cases or pallets of food, and we need some able, strong backs, strong legs to move it all into our shelves and get it sorted and out to people. So that's probably our biggest area of need is people that are comfortable lifting a lot.
You've been in this role now for just over a year. What new initiatives have you introduced?
We've done a couple of things this year. We kind of called it our pilot season. We've tried a few things. So one of the things that we did this summer is we did a summer snack bag. So what we recognize is that through the summer, there are a lot of students that are maybe using the breakfast programs that we see in schools. And that goes away for a few months. And so that extra sort of area where the youth have been able to access nutritious foods is suddenly gone. And we know the stress through the summer for families of needing to find care, increasing, having to have food at home, because I know my two kids, they eat a ton when they're at home. That adds a lot of stress. So we tried a summer snack bag this year to try to help add to the plates of the students. And that was successful. So I imagine we'll do that again this summer. And then we launched recently our a pickup appointment program. So we're trying out, you know, another way to access people and meet the needs, because we're seeing growing demand. What we also understand is that there's a lot of people that need food banks that won't access food banks for a variety of reasons. So we're trying now a pickup time. So on Thursday afternoons, if you've called in and called ahead your order, we'll have it all ready for you so that you can show up at a time between, 1:30 and 4:30. We'll have it all ready for you and ready to go. So it makes it a faster in and out experience for people. So if you don't have the time to get in during the times that we are open for in-person shopping, you have another option. Or maybe you can set up a ride, because a lot of food bank users will have difficulty accessing transportation and they may leave with a lot of groceries from us. So that's a really important piece as well.
How about financial stability?
The organization recognizes that we need to be here for the future of Northumberland. We've been operating for 38 years and we would love to go out of business, but we intend to be able to be here if the community needs us for another 38 years. So we have been able this year to start looking at our building a reserve and what are we going to need to future-proof ourselves so that we can still be here. And if we see the same kind of increased demand that we have in these last 2 years, that we're going to be able to be a viable option for people. So that's definitely what we're working on for sure.
What about advocacy? What are you doing locally to raise awareness of some of the issues that we've talked about today?
Advocacy is a really important piece, and you'll see that if you do read the hunger reports out of Food Banks Canada or Feed Ontario. They will make suggestions, government changes or policy adaptations that will help decrease the need for food banks, and you'll see a lot of that. And that's definitely a piece for us, and it's something we just, I would say, started to look at this year and how can we be more advocates. We tried this year to invite our counselors in during Hunger Action Month, show them around our sites, walk them through what it's like to be a volunteer and the experience that neighbors would have here, and work alongside, from an educational point. If you've never accessed a food bank, you may not know a lot about a food bank. So we've been doing a lot of things that way. And then just adding our voice to Feed Ontario and Food Banks Canada when they bring things up to the government.
Do you ever worry about being sustainable?
I know that the community has strong, favorable feelings about Fair Share. I can see it in the outpouring that we get, especially this time of year, but all year. And so I know that if we needed something, our community would be here for us. And they understand how important our services are.
If people are concerned and they want to help, what can they do?
Oh, absolutely. Great question. There's lots of levels of things that people can do. And it goes from, simple actions when you're in the grocery store, maybe you're shopping with your kids, let them pick a few things that they would love to have and donate it to the food bank, right? Maybe you want to host a third party event and you're having a birthday party and, you've gotten enough gifts over the years that you want to give back instead. And so you have people bring canned goods or potatoes to donate to the food bank. Or maybe you want to volunteer. And so you go to our website and you fill out an application and we find the right spot for you. There's definitely lots of things you can do.
What can we look forward to in 2025?
Oh, 2025. I think what's on my mind is truly, how do we reach more residents who need our help? I think what we've seen in this growth and in this demand is that there are people out there, maybe in precarious situations or not sure whether they should ask for help. Maybe it's, you know, pride, maybe it's embarrassment. There's lots of reasons people don't choose to reach out. And I know I would rather have somebody have food on their table and not go hungry. And so I want to help continue to offer our services in ways, and maybe they're unique ways this year in 2025. Maybe they're different types of pantries or different communities or different service models that we will adapt to make sure that we get to everybody we possibly can. We want to see a future in Northumberland where nobody's hungry.
Megan Flindle, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our time together, and I think it's great to talk to the community about these wonderful services, and we're so thankful for all of them.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.